Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Did you miss us?
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Go ahead, Russ.
Oh, Al Stewart, you're the cat.
You're the man.
Oh, I love this.
Oh, just such a great tune.
Yeah.
It's just a mover. And I saw Al Stewart in concert in Seattle, and golly, when was it, 1978 maybe?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, he was so good. He opened his show with On the Border.
Oh, nice.
What a song to get going on,
wow.
Man. That gets your blood curdling. It's just, whoa!
Very nice. By the way, I'm going in three weeks. I'm going to see David Crosby up in Redwood City. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's playing with his son and a few other band members.
I have something about David Crosby to tell you. But first,
yes,
let us tell the people where they are and what they're listening to.
They're right where they're sitting.
This is LA Talk Radio. And, of course, you're listening to the reprise, one-week reprise of The Writer's Block. In the studio with Russ Avison, and on the phone is Bobby Jean Bell. I am your host, Jim Christina, and we are here for an hour of frivolity and fun and no guest.
Oh, really?
No,
I better leave
guest.
Then. I didn't know that's what we're doing.
All right, my David Crosby story.
Yes.
David, I used to, when I had the company in Oxnard and Dynacorn International, we did mm-hmm. Replica car parts and stuff,
right.
You know, reproduction car parts.
Mm-hmm.
He went to our company, or one of our clients in Ventura,
right,
and wanted her to build him a Shelby, a 67 Shelby.
Really?
So she got the body shell from us, and she did the whole nine yards, and I got to go out and meet David Crosby.
Oh, how cool.
Oh,
and
wow.
We presented his car to him. And
awesome. When
same
was
thing
this?
With Sammy Hagar.
When was this, by the way?
In 2007, 2008.
Oh, okay.
He was still living in Ohio. And
yeah.
I think he was on his third or fourth liver. I'm not sure. You know, the guy goes through
him
like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He gets them on Amazon, though.
Yeah, he buys them by the crate.
This is LA Talk Radio. We are allowed to be
And David, if you're listening, hey, you know, go for those extra livers.
Yeah.
we opted not to have it. Actually, Russ is the one that brought this up. We've been on a hiatus for the last month. We're going to be on hiatus again after tonight until probably about mid-September. But right now, Russ decided that he wanted to do one more live show, and I said, okay. So we got a hold of Bobby Jean, and we made it set up, and Sam, of course, Sam, the owner of the station, and Ronan, and everybody just gladly did it. So here we are.
That's because they make money.
Yeah, they do, especially with the show.
Yeah.
So anyway, we are here. We just started, this is our last hurrah for a while, so I just thought we'd just come in and have some fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Bobby, you're on.
You're on. Yeah,
oh,
we'll
listen.
Have some fun.
My biggest fear is that you guys would call on me.
Well, okay, we just did.
You know, the hardest thing, I have missed the doing the show. I figured that I would continue to read, you know, a book a week to uh-huh. stay in practice. And because I have this big stack of books that I've been wanting to read, but were not by guests,
right.
You know, we didn't have enough time to read anything except the guest
right.
book.
Right.
And I read one book
I know.
In a month.
I haven't read any, to be
was
honest.
Was it a Dr. Seuss book?
You know what? It was great. It's by an author, C.J. Box, and he writes a series, and this is, I don't know, it's in the middle of the series. It stands alone like all great ones. And it's about a Wyoming fish and game warden. And so it's a little bit like, there's a little bit of Longmire in this. Ooh, it's really okay. Great. I couldn't put it down, although it did take me, it took me longer to read it than usual.
Does he carry this character through all of his books?
Yes, I believe so. This mm-hmm. particular one's called The Disappeared, and Lee Child writes, one of today's solid gold, A-list must-read writers.
Wow.
And the main character's name is Joe Pickett. And so this is a Joe Pickett novel.
Well, and if really Lee Child, if he promotes it, because I love his books.
Yeah, you do, don't you?
Yeah, I'm waiting. He's got another one coming out in November.
I think.
Yeah, no, it's like every November. Yeah, he does one a year.
Ah, well, you know, yeah. I was listening back to the best of, and I caught the show with Craig Johnson, his first appearance on the show.
Yes,
and
yes.
I had forgotten how much fun we had with that man.
Oh, I know. And he was just giving us gold. Pearls, nuggets.
Totally gold.
Wisdom that we're just like, everything he said was important is the way I felt. And with fun, you know, he just talked the whole time with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
Like he was just joyful.
Right.
You know, everything he said was so joyful. Yeah.
Well, you could tell he was having a good time with us as much as we were having with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then his second appearance, I think, is coming up on the best of.
Oh, okay.
So I think you put John Sanford in there too, didn't you?
I did.
Okay. That was another show that was fun. He was a very good guest as well. I really enjoyed talking with him.
Yes, he was.
You know, I think that one other author that we should talk about tonight is Jim Christina.
Okay. Yeah, you know, my philosophy is writers never have a problem talking about themselves.
No.
Now, Russ, why would you say that?
Well, you know, and actually I will tell you that it was just the other day Jim called and he said, you know, we're just going to get together and just kind of BS and have fun and talk about other shows and things. And I said, you know, I have not read your last book. So I said, I'm going to read it, and then we're going to interview you about your writing style and what you do. So Jefferson's Chance, which just came out, was it just this
February.
Year?
February, yeah.
What a great book.
I know, it's a fun book.
I'm going to tell you, I knocked the whole thing out today.
Yeah.
I read cover to cover today.
It's one of those can't stop reading.
It is. It is bloodier than crap, though.
It is.
It really is. I mean, there's brains and going all over the place and arrows hitting people and, yeah. But it's good, and it's a good story.
It's a great story.
It should be a Netflix film, don't you think?
Oh yeah,
there you go.
Oh yeah.
So mm-hmm. Jim, why don't, as we like to ask a lot of it, why don't you give us a little thumbnail sketch of what the book's about?
Jefferson's Chance is about a young man named Jefferson Greeley, and at 10 years old, he lost his right leg to a rattlesnake bite, about 4 inches below his knee, and he grew up with this wooden appendage that they just hollowed out, like almost like hollowed out a log and put his foot in it.
So it's kind of like a pig leg.
Yeah, and he's lived his whole life from 10 up to about 23, I think he is, when the book really gets into chapter one. But his dream is become a Texas Ranger like his father was. And his neighbor and all the people that he knew growing up were Texas Rangers. And his father had died probably about 3 months before he lost his leg. So the book opens, he's in the Texas Rangers office in Austin, Texas, and he's asking Smiley Jones, who is the captain, who actually was the captain mm-hmm. in Austin, he wanted to be a Ranger, and Smiley just left.
Oh, I got to say, and he goes, well, you know what? You come back when you grow another leg.
Yes, yeah. That's what he told him. He said, you grow another leg and come back and you can be a Ranger.
Yep.
Well, as it goes, and he's... Now Jefferson's all pissed off, and he goes to the saloon, and he starts drinking, and is talking to the bartender about his leg, and he can't join the Texas Rangers. And Thomas M. Griffith, who designed the suspension bridge over the Brazos River in Waco, Texas, in real life, heard this discussion and offered to design him a new leg, which he does. And the old smithy, I don't remember his name, Washington? Was it Washington?
Sure.
Whatever. Anyway, says, you know, he builds it for him. Well, long story short, Jefferson gets to where he can walk normal, jump up and down, run, do anything a limbed person can do, goes back in and and almost dances for Smiley Jones, and he gets the job.
Yeah. It. You know, I have to ask you, because in talking about the book, you told me that the guy who designed the leg mm-hmm. in the book, mm-hmm. he's a real guy.
Yeah, he's a real
guy. And he really designed that bridge.
He really did design the bridge.
So when you came up with the idea of this leg, did you think about the guy first and the bridge and then say, oh, he could do this leg? Or did you just kind of have to research to find somebody
to
do
it? Well, I came up with the guy first. I knew I wanted it had to be an engineer that was fairly well known back in the 1870s. Mm-hmm. And considering that Thomas Griffith designed the Waco Bridge and it was built in 1870, I just figured that he would use knowledge of moving parts and, you know, because bridges have to move.
Right.
And he would use that kind of knowledge and put together, you know, design a leg that would work like a natural leg.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read the description of how it works, it actually, if you put it together, it probably would work that way.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, yeah. Well, with the pivot on the ankle.
With the pivot on the ankle and the spring going up the calf. Yep. And you know, and then the flat spring for the toes. And mm-hmm. and so Jefferson virtually walks with no limp.
Yeah. Russ, as a reader, because I think you and I approach this book the same way, were you lulled into a feeling like this is real?
Absolutely. You know, that's a really interesting perspective, but that now that you mention it, yes, I was reading this and I started thinking of how the design of it, I'm trying to figure out how it was working. Uh-huh. And then I thought, oh, Jim wrote this.
Well, I think Jim has that kind of wonderful ability. A number of years ago, he wrote a book, Bugles in the Sun.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know, even though I had read a lot of books about the battle and Custer and leading up to the battle and after the battle and so forth, I truly thought I was reading a newly discovered, you know, diary. And even though I kind of knew that wasn't it, I totally bought into it. I think that is a wonderful thing for a writer. That's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
For a writer, for us readers, that's such a gift of the writer.
Yeah, we I opened each chapter with a diary entry in that book,
mm-hmm.
and then went back and told the story of the entire day.
And the other part too is that, at least in this book, in reading it, there was no question in my mind that these were real people. I mm-hmm. felt like I was reading a historical document.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an
mm-hmm.
accounting of something that happened. Yeah, it was mm-hmm. really good.
Well, I of course, Caleb I already had introduced in a book, End of Line.
Right.
And most people that have read my stuff know that Caleb Strinkfeld was an ex-Texas Ranger, mm-hmm. and he was a Teamster, and he was a scout, and he was a traveling marshal. And but nobody had ever heard of Jefferson Greeley. I mean, you know, that's because he really didn't exist. But I just, you know, for him to run into Caleb, and for them two to hook up as unlikely pair as they could get.
Yeah, and it was interesting too because I mean I've read End of Line, and when Caleb showed up in this, I know him.
Yeah. But you know, it's there's such a dichotomy there. You know, Jefferson is like focused, and like he's mm-hmm. just he is one thing and one thing only at this point. He's a Texas Ranger,
mm-hmm.
which is epitomized by when they're in the saloon. And he walks over to those two guys, and Caleb's going, you sure you want to do that?
Yeah.
You know, and he just doesn't hesitate. He's now a Texas Ranger, and he's going to act like a Texas Ranger.
But he also had the skills.
Yes.
He had some skill sets. Instinctual.
Yeah.
You know, not to give anything away, but he knew the situation as it was unfolding.
Right.
And that's why they came out on the better side of that little interaction.
But I think the fun part of that encounter was the guy that he had shot, not the guy that he hit in the head, but the guy that he shot is sitting there leaning up against the wall, and he goes, "What you going to shoot us for? We didn't do nothing." and Caleb says, "He told you." He says, "No reason to get all pissy. He says, he just wants to ask you a question."
Yeah.
And he goes, "And besides that, he didn't shoot both of you, only you."
Yeah. That's right. Wasn't there one mm-hmm. one of them that they shot? Mm-hmm. He said, "Just because you're stupid."
Yeah. Well, just you before because you're stupid.
Yeah, that was. But I wouldn't let that get out because, you know, in today's world,
oh, yeah.
I mean, there's so many people you could shoot just for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Not you, Bobby Jean. Not you.
But you know, it's almost like the book follows Jefferson as he becomes a Texas Ranger. And he's so new at this mm-hmm. that he virtually forgets to go get the pack mule to pack his supplies on.
Right.
So he has to go and get a mule and then be embarrassed because he didn't get the mule first.
Right.
And then he winds up with a mule that...
Oh, you had a great name for the mule,
too. Yeah, Geoffrey Chaucer.
Yeah.
And he says, well, now I'm stuck with a mule yeah. with a handle like Geoffrey Chaucer. So they're going to laugh at me. And the delivery guy says, I don't think so. It was a ranger that named him. You know, so... But he liked old Geoffrey Chaucer. And
how long did it take you to write this one?
Oh, God. That was, oh, geez. Oh, I want to say 9 months.
9 months?
Yeah.
And when you started this one, did you have the story all laid out in your head?
I knew where it was going to go.
Okay. So you knew the final scenes of what was
Jerry and I there. Talked about the ending to this book mm-hmm. at length quite a few times. Mm-hmm. And we went back and forth. It just didn't seem right to write this book, even if it's Jefferson's chance, mm-hmm. it just didn't seem right to let him live, because then it would have been, you know, a cliche like Louis L'Amour, and that's not what I wanted. I wanted a book that was real.
Mm-hmm. You hit that.
And I wanted a book that showed the camaraderie of two people, even though they're diametrically opposed mm-hmm. in personalities,
right?
That they can come together and act as one.
Yes. It was also something I've kind of noticed is a theme, not a theme, but a reoccurring event in your books, that many of the characters that you expect to be ongoing, you kill them off.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
You do. You know, what was the show, Lost? They would come in
oh,
for
yeah,
every
yeah,
reading,
yeah.
and they wouldn't know who was going to be
right.
surviving. Who,
yeah.
Your books are the same way.
Yeah.
You know, you expect certain people to be there. Nope.
Oh, you know who's my worst critic? Is my sister-in-law.
Why is that? She
said, well, I see you killed off another one I liked. Well, but you know what? Every single writer in the world, we've discussed this many times in this program, mm-hmm. every single writer goes through the same thing. You kill off a guy, somebody liked him.
Yeah.
You know?
But again, that's something that means that you've written a character that character has taken over your pen and written himself
exactly.
that we become engaged with. And that's a good thing.
Right.
I didn't like Stinky.
No.
I didn't like either one of them. Like,
oh, nobody likes Stinky.
And I actually wrote them trying to outdo the other as far as bad acts.
Yeah.
And I couldn't.
No, they Stinky were both, was the worst.
Stinky was the bad one. I mean, Sandy had some...
He was like, what did you do that for?
Yeah, he had a little bit. Of, like he said, what'd you shoot the minister for? Because he pissed me off.
Yeah. Or no, he was preparing to piss me off.
He was preparing to piss me off. You know... And all they're doing is they're going to Lamb Passes to go start a church that they've been asked to come out there and do. And
I know.
They didn't make it.
Oh, gosh.
No, they didn't make it. Yeah, sometimes scenes like that are hard for me to read. You know, I don't know if that's part of my aging process, because I'm finding that watching TV, the same thing. Things that wouldn't – I've been watching this series called Outlander. And oh. It's really good,
yeah,
very interesting. I'm really enjoying it. But some of the scenes where we're getting into like flogging, and it's like, oh my, I have to mute it, and I have to just, I multitask. So I just keep working on whatever. I look up every now and again to see, oh, okay, we're past that now. And I didn't used to be that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's as we age and we realize that our own lifespan, you know, is shortening every day that we're alive
right.
or something. But.
Right.
I find that it's just me as a reader. But sometimes just have to flip through those pages. I don't really want to see it in my mind's eye.
You know, the truth about the time back in the 1870s and 1880s is that there wasn't a lot of discourse when you were going to shoot somebody.
Right.
They didn't sit there and discuss it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Stinky. Stinky didn't discuss it. He just shot him.
Oh, okay. You remind me of a very famous scene in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Where Eli mm-hmm. Wallach, playing Tuco,
yeah.
is sitting in the bathtub. And it's not a bathtub. It's a big, you know, metal
right.
Horse trough,
right?
He's got suds over there. And he's on the second floor. And everybody wants to kill him. And he hears the spurs of the steps, you know, people coming up.
This, coming upstairs.
No, it wasn't Blondie.
No,
it right. wasn't Blondie. It was three guys.
Right.
Three guys. And so he's quickly trying to load his gun. And they kick the door open, and they're standing there. and they start telling him, you know, you did this and you did that. And Tuco has his gun under the suds. And all of a sudden, he just shoots all three of them. And his words are, if you're going to shoot, shoot. Don't talk.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's no discourse.
No. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, these guys, they didn't want to talk to you. If they're going to shoot you, they're going to shoot you. Mm-hmm. You know, if they aren't going to kill you within the first 5 seconds, then you had a chance to survive. But most of them didn't. And...
But they also shot you for a lot lesser things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, like the Stinky says, oh, he was going to piss me off, so
yeah,
I shot him.
Yeah. Well, that was Stinky, though. I mean, he was that kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, and then he took that one girl out and put her on the wagon wheel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. This is maybe a far-fetched kind of question, but we are looking at history after the Civil War.
Right.
And I don't recall if any of these men if you say anything about them having survived that war. But I do wonder, having come out of that war for so many men that went west.
Could be.
Less, you know, you're just so accustomed to just being, you just being confronted and having to just make, you know, take action. There was no talk in Pickett's Charge, you know, no. Or any of the other types of things that they maybe would have had to live through.
Right.
Where
well, I think most of it is, and that probably is a good part, not a good part of it, but a part of it. And a bigger part of it is the fact that everybody, well, the people that were going to be nefarious or not very nice people, gravitated west because there was no law.
Right.
And they got away with doing what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And there was no one to stop them. Mm-hmm. And, which is why that the marshaling of the towns started back in the 1860s. They started hiring town marshals. And they would clean up a town, then they would leave, and they would move on. Hickok used to do that. That's what he did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of them moved on. Caleb Stringfellow was one. He just went town to town.
Town to town, right.
Mm-hmm. They would go and clean it up, and sometimes he would stay a little while, and sometimes as soon as the town was cleaned up and he was pretty sure it wasn't going to get all rowdy again, he'd leave.
You know, it's kind of, for those of you who don't know, there's an old abandoned mining town up near Mammoth, California, called Bodie.
Yeah.
And I was up there about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, this is my second time. Oh, and we got to go there at night after the park closed, and we got to photograph at night till like
catch
1 in the
ghosts?
Morning. No ghosts. But one thing that, talking to the historians that you know, populate the area there, that was a town that was pretty pretty raunchy. I mean,
they had a dead man for breakfast.
Yeah, uh-huh. There you go.
Yeah, it was a rockin' and rowdy town.
Yeah, but it's an amazing place to go visit.
Yeah.
And when it was abandoned, the interesting thing about seeing it is that the stores – that are there, when they left, they left it alone. They have not touched it. There's the dust has settled on everything. It's pretty amazing.
It's a whole museum.
Yeah.
I did, last time I was in Bodie, we did a 3-day ride from Bodie to Bishop for Mule Days.
Mm. Oh, okay.
For Mule Days.
Yeah, and it was, oh my God, it was, I mean, not only was it really cool to mount a horse in Bodie.
Right.
You know, but to ride the 3 days, you know, over the mountain and then down into Bishop, and go down on the Mule Days parade.
By the way, have you been watching Yellowstone?
Yes.
Did you watch it this most recent one?
Yes.
Did you notice they mentioned Mule Days
in
Bishop?
I did. Yes, I did.
I looked
when
at
they
Karen
were doing,
said,
when they
oh,
were doing
yeah.
the sliding horses. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been a fun series, by the way.
So far, it's been pretty good.
Yeah, but you know, you talk about no discourse back in the 1870s. Right. This is all about discourse, Yellowstone, because it's modern-day cowboys.
Right.
And, you know, it's all about the plotting and planning and Kevin Costner's daughter. Oh, my God.
Isn't she a piece?
Well, they're all pretty rotten people.
Yeah.
They all are.
Yeah.
You know, Casey's the only one that's got a modicum of salvation in him.
And his wife that he's separated from, she's good. I like her.
Yeah, but she's going to wind up. Good. She's going to hook up with that other Indian guy.
Oh, the physical therapist guy?
Yeah, the physical therapist.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. But then Casey will kill him.
Well, yeah. And then he'll be on the run. And...
yeah. You know who's joining the cast is, and I can't remember his name, but he was in Lost. He played Sawyer in Lost.
I didn't watch Lost.
Oh, okay. Well, he's joining the cast.
Huh.
Yeah, so.
Anyway, I like Yellowstone.
Yes, it's really enjoyable. Yeah. But I like it because of where it is.
Yeah. Well,
Mm-hmm. Which is very close to where you're going to be.
Yes, it is. Jefferson's Chance actually is probably one of the finest pieces I've written. Mm-hmm. And next to Jonah Blue, I think it's going to be right up there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you said that the sales of this
the
book
sales
are
of
approaching.
That book are approaching. Not yet, but they're getting.
But
they're
on pace. They're on
they're
pace.
They're climbing.
Together.
Yeah, they're climbing. And mm-hmm. and Bobby Jean, just so you know, Jonah Blue has gone over 12,000 copies.
Oh, that's wonderful, Jim. Congratulations.
Yeah, I especially like the checks that I get from him.
Yeah, and I wanted to promote this Jefferson's Chance because Jim told me that any books we sell over the next 48 hours, I get a commission. Yeah.
You get a cut, do you, Russell?
5%. But at any rate, I wanted to show the camaraderie of the two guys that are just so diametrically opposed. And then when you throw Estevez, mm-hmm. Rialto, right. In the mix, who is the guy who owns the ranch?
And I thought that was Charlie Sheen's brother. So
well, I could have been. Know. I don't know. because his daughter's been taken too.
Right.
And so the three of them are now in pursuit of these Comanches. And the Comanche band keeps growing. They keep picking up these stragglers.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that was interesting because you didn't really. That was one thing I didn't really know where they were getting, except they did say that they collect them because they started, they had like 30 guys. They ended up with over 40.
30 guys, yeah.
And they had over 40 when they were full strength.
And then when they hit the army, they were, I think they were like 36 or 40 of them.
Yeah.
And they hit the army twice, and they let them think that they ran them away, and then they came at them.
Yeah, it was a good book, and it's an easy read, but it's a page turner. That's what it is. It's not that, I don't know how to. You know, there's just some books that you pick up and you go, okay, I'm going through this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very good.
Well, I wanted...
I want to commend you on this one.
The end of the fight, the actual end of the fight, mm-hmm. I won't tell
don't
you.
Don't give anything
I'm
away
not going to tell you how it ends there. But the book doesn't end there, but the fight does.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to show that the Plains Indians had a grudging respect for crazy people.
Yes.
And that is a fact, and that is true. And the poor guy is standing there screaming at the top of his lungs, holding a Bowie knife. That's all he has.
Yep.
And MFing, I'm going to come and get me, you MF. You know, he's just going at it. And
yep.
They're just stopping. They're staring at him. And they go, whoa, what is this dude?
Yeah, well, you know, they say that if you are in a part of town at night and it's not very safe and you think people are going to come get you, sit, piss your pants and start talking to yourself, and they'll leave you alone.
Yeah. But the one guy rode up to him and swiped the front of his bone breastplate.
Right.
And we flat hand and then go out. That's the sign of bye.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're accepted. See ya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he just couldn't figure it out why they left me.
Yeah, it was good, very good.
But
story.
The scene, I wanted the scene to be, because I am a Vietnam veteran. I've seen battlefields after they're done, and I wanted to get the reader to get the feel of looking down in that ravine and seeing hundreds of cartridges empty that had been fired in this fight.
Oh, you know what else was really a moving part was when they went to count the dead, and they couldn't really be sure because there were so many body parts that were dismembered from the torsos.
Yeah,
I mean it's not for the squeamish.
No,
this is the part where Bobby Jean would turn.
But
off
then, but then,
him.
But then, you know, at the end, another guy shows up to help Caleb.
Right,
he just shows up out of nowhere.
Yeah,
he's a miner, and he's
Cotton.
Just, Cotton, yeah. And he just kicks him and he goes, come on, wake up, you ain't dead yet.
Yeah. Oh, what's his real name? Norman? Is it Norman?
I think it is Norman, yeah.
Norman, but they call me Cotton. He goes, I don't know
why.
Yeah. That made me laugh. Yeah, I don't know why.
But I mean, you know, at least Caleb had the honor to take Jefferson back to his mother's ranch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I mean, not Shades of Lonesome Dove, because I didn't want it to look that way.
Right.
Right.
I wanted it to be a strictly a thing of honor, and Cotton could go with him. Didn't have to go with him. Didn't matter to Caleb. He was going.
Right.
And so when he got to that one town, they said, "Why don't we just plant him here? He's never going to know the difference." No, 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 no.
Yeah. How how do you go about creating and developing a character? Like when you start the book, I mean, mm-hmm. you knew Caleb was going to be in it,
right?
you probably had an idea that there's going to be this guy with the leg.
Right.
Okay. But beyond that, I mean, how do you create this persona? Because they all have to stand out separately so you can have them mesh together.
Well, not only that, but you also have to create dialogue for them. Mm-hmm. And the dialogue has to be consistent.
Right.
Throughout. So, I mean, once Jefferson starts talking in a particular way, it's got to keep talking that way all the way through the book.
Well, I don't mean just like dialect.
But
you know, it's always puzzled me, like when I watch a television series, and maybe there'll be 13 episodes, and there's different writers for each episode, but the characters are the same character. Mm-hmm. So how do they maintain continuity?
In that instance, and what I do normally is I will write the history of the character down.
Oh, okay.
I know what the history is, and sometimes I'll throw a little bit of backstory in. Like Caleb's backstory wasn't in this book, but it was in End of Line.
Right.
Jefferson's backstory was in this book. Mm-hmm. Of course, we didn't care about Stinky and Sandy, so they just, I mean, they had no backstory as far as I was concerned. And Estevez Rialto, the Rialto Rancho, had been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he was the youngest owner of it, mm-hmm. and his family, of course. So that was his backstory. And Muckruru and Pecos had a backstory, and they were
right, but they were real characters.
They were real characters, and their backstory was actually in the book. Mm-hmm. So, when you develop a character, do you have to kind of see it in your face and your eyes and mm-hmm. behind your eyes and look at him and say, okay, he's going to be this way. Mm-hmm. So once you figure out that maybe he has a hump on his back and walks with a limp, who knows?
Right, but that's a physical attribute. I mean. For an example, if somebody were to describe me, one of the things they'd say is he tries to make a joke out of everything.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's just me.
Yeah.
Okay. And I like to talk. But to develop a character, like the personality and two distinct things that I noticed. You had Jefferson who he was new at everything. He kind of just figured he knew what he had to do.
Right.
But he was new. And then you had Caleb, who was seasoned, and you saw him sort of guiding through.
He was already had gone through it.
Right, right. So, but where do the ideas come from?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. No, that's fair. That's fair, because I've mm-hmm. heard so many times on the show, we hear so many authors will come on and say, you know, it just came to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Caleb, of course, his story was already written, and he was part of the Texas Ranger detachment, the 13 men that were on the border. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the guys in the book, in Jefferson's Chance, says, hey, I heard of a Stringfield on the border.
Right.
With the Rangers. Says, was that you? And he goes, a long time ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a known guy.
When you mix real people or real events in with the fictional ones, do you go and do research, Jim, for the character, for, you know, real characters that you want to introduce to the story?
Yes.
So, and where and Could where and how do you do the research?
Well, I mean, it's like Thomas Griffith. I wanted a real engineer that lived back then that was known for something. And it came to me, the Waco Suspension Bridge. Okay, I know that was 1870, so I looked up the Waco Suspension Bridge. Waco Suspension Bridge is designed by Thomas M. Griffith. There he was. And then I also had learned a little bit of his biography in that when the bridge was completed, he was out of work, right. As a lot of engineers were when projects were done.
Mm-hmm, right.
And he shuffled from saloon to saloon.
I was going to say, what better place to be than just hanging out in a saloon drinking?
Well, that's, I mean, you know, when you really got down to it, that's where they were going to get most of their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he designed Jefferson's leg for the patent. Mm-hmm. And virtually nobody in that saloon knew what the patent was. What's a right. patent? Mm-hmm. Nobody knew.
Right.
He knew.
Sure.
You know, I'll do it, but I don't want any money. I want the patent.
Is that bridge still standing?
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. It's still there. I think they've rebuilt it several times, but it's still there. Wow. But, and Thomas Griffith was, he went on to build other things, and, you know, he shows up in history here and there, and, you know.
But never really built a leg.
Never really built a leg. Well, it's like, okay, Georg Eiffel.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Eiffel Tower.
Tower, right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you know that he also built the framework for the Statue of Liberty?
No, but it makes sense.
I did know that.
Did you?
See?
I wouldn't have remembered that if you'd asked me, but I do know that, yeah.
Well, I dropped down to rung number three in the group here.
People just, people show up and disappear out of history all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that they're not doing anything. It's just that they're not doing anything noteworthy at that point.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So Griffith's noteworthy thing was he designed Jefferson's leg. And then, of course, at the end of the book, I had him patent it and became, you know, this big success, and he became a rich millionaire. Mm-hmm. He never had to build anything for Jen Fizzes ever again.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So, Bobby Jean, I have a question for you. Because I came into the show as just doing radio. I've interviewed a lot of people, but not an author. I don't know anything about you and your background with books, because I know you're tied into a lot of reading, but I don't know if you've written anything. I mean, we've never really talked about it.
No, she doesn't. She hasn't written.
No, anything. I'm the reader. I'm like you. I haven't written a thing.
Have you wanted to?
No, actually. Okay. I don't know that I ever... No, I can't say that I have ever felt that was of interest to me. Reading always has been. Of course, for our business's website, I am writing descriptions all day long.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But they're not, they're not writing fiction or nonfiction. I have to say, though, Russ, and I love chatting with the creative spirit. I love talking to designers, artists, musicians, songwriters, poets. I for my soul, I kind of have to be around them. I have to kind of feed off of their creativity, if you will, and I feel a real need to support it and support them and find platforms and ways to get their voice out there. So the way that I met Jim was because I co-hosted another radio show at the time in Santa Clarita on KHTS Radio called Around the Barn. And every time that Jim had a new book out, we had him come in, mm-hmm. and he would be a guest on the radio show. And now after, interviewing 215 authors or so, I feel like, maybe I would like to write something.
Well, after
I don't know what, though.
After 215 authors, you probably should be able to.
Yeah. Or at least you should be able to hold up well during the book circuit when they're interviewing
right.
you.
Right. But, I found out one thing about writing, and this is, it holds true for every writer that we talk to, is the title of the book is extremely important. And the title of the book has to be someplace in the body of the work. Mm-hmm. And they have all told us that. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Jefferson's Chance, it's in there. Mm. The name of the book is in the dialogue at the end of the book. Everything is in there. It's just said it's. I think it's important to put it in. It's like a poem. The name of the poem should be part of the hook, mm-hmm. or a song.
Right.
So it's the same thing with the book. The title of the book should be part of the story.
Interesting. Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, also, I have always felt that I personally am not creative. I mean, I would
disagree with you mightily.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, see, I've never felt that, but somebody told me one time, they said, you train dogs.
Yeah.
And you're very good at it.
Yes, you are.
And they said, that's where your creativity comes out.
Right.
Is in that. But I've never felt that I had a creative, I took creative writing courses in school and I did, but I wrote crap.
Oh, well.
I did, and never something that...
It takes working on it. Just keep doing it. Mm-hmm. That's all it takes. I know that you're very good at getting rattlesnakes in trash cans.
That I can do.
That I know.
I can wrangle a rattlesnake.
You can wrangle a rattler.
Yes.
He actually did that one night, Bobby Jean.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah, I think it was my second lesson with Bella. When she was, it was the puppy class.
Yeah, that's right.
It was like out in the second week.
In Moore Park.
Right. It was in Moore Park. And I went to sit down in a chair and I almost flipped over, head over shit, because I looked down, there was a rattlesnake
curled up
behind the rear of the leg.
Yep.
And I just jumped up the old snake.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And of course, my dog is right there. She's at this point, she's like 16 weeks old, 17 weeks old. Mm-hmm. you know, liable to stick her nose down there.
Yep. So I got a big trash can and a pooper scooper, I think.
Pooper scooper.
And I wrangled the snake into the trash can.
And he took it over the cornfield.
And I took it, I walked it into the cornfield. I probably took it, I don't know, a quarter mile away and let it go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Since we were just talking a minute ago about book titles, it just reminded me of an email that I got today from a writer's blog that I follow, called thejohnfox.com is his blog. And his whole blog today was about how to create brilliant book titles. And he goes on exactly what we're all saying, but he does talk about, you know, it needs to be unique to capture the essence of the book. You've got to catch the reader's attention. Mm-hmm. It needs to be easily remembered. For instance, A Pride and Prejudice is a good example. A bad example would be Then We Came to the End. It should be easily pronounced. Right. It should avoid confusion with the other book. And he gives an example, Girl on a Train. Two books came out last year that had similar titles, Girl on a Train and The Girl on the Train.
Right.
And The Girl on the Train was a bestseller. And he also suggests you come up with 50 to 100 names and just test them out on everybody you know.
Right.
When you're working to come up with a title for your book.
Right. Well, you know who came up with the title for Jefferson's Chance? Jerry.
I was going to just say.
Really?
Jerry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many titles do you think you kicked around before you finalized it?
Oh, I don't know, 4 or 5, probably.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
You know, I'm busy writing. I give it a working title. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm working on a book right now.
What was the working title for this?
Jefferson's
Peg
something.
Leg? No.
No, I Jefferson's Leg or I don't know, you know.
I'm
something stupid.
Right.
But I'm working on a book right now, and it's called The Longest Night.
Okay.
And it's not going to wind up being called that eventually, sure. But I mean, that's my working title as I save it under that, you know. So, but The Hunter's back, Bobby Jane, as a matter of fact. So you're going
to. Oh, really?
Yeah, he's back.
Oh, is he getting ready to be published and come to life?
Oh, no. I'm only working on chapter 3. But Lenny and Whitey are back too, so.
Oh.
For those of you who don't know, Lenny and Whitey are two idiot. I don't even know what to call them. They're just idiots. They just happened.
Stinky would have shot him.
They just happened to run into the. They hate the hunter. They happened to run into him in the mountains. He's going up to his hunting camp, mm-hmm. And they follow him. And they don't know what to do. And it's just like, you know, we need food. They always needed something. So we'll just wait for him to go to sleep, and we'll just go down there and. They don't take it. So Lenny mounts his horse, and he goes down there, and the horse kind of trips over something and rears up. And, of course, Lenny's gun goes off and shoots the hunter in the chest.
Oh, jeez.
He goes, what you shooting for? He's like, I didn't mean to. Well, shit, he's dead now.
Yeah.
Well, he's not. But,
yeah.
But that's, you know, that's the way they do things. What was the one, Eastern Men, Bobby, that was... Those two and the two guys from Brooklyn?
I kind of get them confused, Jim. I'm so sorry to tell you that.
They're the ones that robbed Phineas Barrelflower and left him standing out there in the desert. And the kid finds him after he's been bitten by the scorpion.
Oh.
And he's screaming his bloody head off. He's like, I'm going to die. And the Apache kid looked at him and starts laughing. He goes, that's so funny. He goes, you ain't going to die. So when the hunter and striker find him, they're sitting on opposite ends of this rock, their backs to each other, not speaking.
So, well, with all that you have coming up with this change that's going to happen pretty quick in your life, I find it hard to believe that you have time to write.
Well, I had to start it because it's been rolling around in my head. So I had some time that nothing was going on. And so I figured, okay, I'm going to give it a shot and, you know, write a couple chapters and see where it goes. Jerry likes it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
I mean, you know, but if I want a title, that's where I go.
Uh-huh.
I go to Jerry.
Do you write when you're on vacation?
No.
You don't?
No.
So vacation is a vacation.
Vacation is a vacation.
Okay.
I don't even turn my phone on when I'm on vacation.
You're a smart man.
Sometimes I don't even take it. Of course, I never go on vacation, so.
Oh, well, there you go. Yes.
Russ, do you like to read... one over the other, nonfiction versus fiction? Do you have a preference?
Fiction, definitely.
Fiction.
Yes, definitely so.
There you go.
And okay. And any particular genre, besides what we read for this show, any genre that you know is always your kind of go to that you enjoy the most?
I love. Well, I mentioned Lee Childs, and I really mm-hmm. like the Jack Reacher series.
Right.
And mm-hmm. then I think it was Michael Balducci. Is that his name?
Balducci.
Yeah, he wrote uh-huh. three. I don't know if you know this. He wrote three books with a character. Okay, you know what? Lee Child's character is Jack Reacher.
Right.
Okay, his character is John Puller.
I'm sorry. Oh, you told me this before. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's a military, ex-military yeah. cop. But I also really like time travel books. And I just finished a series. There's eight books. Sean mm-hmm. Inman is the author. Mm. And it's called the Middle Falls Time Travel Series.
Wow.
Really good. Really good.
Hey, when you go north, when you go to Yosemite, which way do you go?
It depends. This last time I went up through
395
and entered in through.
It's faster, isn't it?
Well, it depends on which side of the park you want to go on.
Well, no, I'm not going to Yosemite. I'm going to cut off on the 95 north and go up into Boise, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can do that just before you get to Lee Vining.
Yeah.
There's a cutoff and you can go. And it's just like 8 miles to the entrance yeah. there. There's big Tioga Lake, I think it is, right there at the entrance to yeah. Yosemite. And you can drive into Yosemite. I mean, if you just have a little time and you want to check it out, it's real pretty.
Well, I'm going to have Bella with me.
So what? She'll enjoy it.
She will, but I mean, you know, I've never taken a long trip with her.
Yeah, believe me, it's going to be a piece of cake.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. And you just stop every, you know, two
I'm
hours.
Taking her and get carrots out. And I'm taking her carrots with me and, you know.
Yeah. Good. That's all you need.
Yeah. Just her carrots and her baby buddies.
Ah.
And a sleeping pill.
And a sleeping pill. No, so, you'll have a good time. How long a drive is it?
It says, well, Jason made it in 10 hours. I think 10 hours is what he told his mom. And it says 12 hours and 35 minutes.
Oh, mm-hmm. So you're going to do it 2 days then?
No, one.
Are you just going to drive straight
yeah.
through?
Yeah.
That's
boring. Yeah, we just did 12 hours a day for 2 days.
I'll just get up at 4. I'll get on the road at 4 and mm-hmm. be there by 4.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go, Bobby Jean?
We went into the Midwest to event up to see my mom outside Chicago, but we went, you know, 12 on the way home. It was, we had 12 hours from Oklahoma City to here, and we had 12 hours from wherever we were to Oklahoma, from Nashville to Oklahoma City, I think. Our other days were a little bit shorter, like 8 hours,
uh-huh.
but we had, you know, we always had 2 12-hour days.
Yeah.
Wow. Where's your mom outside of Chicago? Where is she?
She lives in Carroll Stream.
Oh,
area.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm from Chicago, so.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I used to live in
Chi-Town boy.
Did you live in Chicago proper?
No, Skokie.
Oh, in Skokie. Okay.
Yeah. And I had relatives in Donner's Grove and St. Charles. And mm-hmm. My uncle was a newspaperman. He used to own the Batavia Herald.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, you know what?
What?
Coming up in September.
Yes.
It's the Writer's Block. We'll be back live.
Yay.
We'll all be remote.
Yes.
Russell still be is doing his Thursdays, and Bobby Jean, you'll be on with me the rest of the time. And
I just have to find a soundproof booth so the dogs don't interrupt.
Oh yeah, huh? Yeah, you do have that problem. but our very first guest is Kathleen Rogers.
Cool.
She was on with us when we did the last show, and we kind of usurped her time a little bit. So I'm going to give her an opportunity to get back on and kind of make it up to
That'd
her.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. That'd be nice. Yeah, we always love talking to her.
Yeah, she's a great writer.
Bobby Jean, let's face it, you and I just really like talking. It doesn't matter who's here.
Well, yeah, we all like talking.
And if we don't have a guest, you and
reading.
I can chat.
And we like reading, too.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, it's been strange not having to pick up a book this last month.
It has been. It makes me concerned that I'm falling out of practice and I won't be able to fit it back into my schedule. But of course, you know, we will.
Well, you'll still be up to three. Up till 3 o'clock anyway. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's my normal.
Yeah. You know, that's when I'm getting up. You're going to bed.
True.
I'll tell you what. I have noticed my reading skills have improved greatly.
Oh, good.
Over the last number of years. Well, I took reading courses in high school and I could read very fast.
Yeah.
But, like your book here, what is it, 230 pages?
228.
Yeah, okay. And I knocked this out in, I don't know, 4 hours. 3 hours, something like that.
Wow. And
it's a fun read, though.
Russ, yeah. are you taking any notes as you read, knowing if it's somebody that you're going to be interviewing?
I do sometimes.
Do you just
sometimes.
Read? Or?
No, I do take notes sometimes because certain you things will trigger me. I'll go, oh, this would be a good question to ask, and I'll make a little note. Uh-huh. But because I read this all today, it was so fresh in my mind. And as I did make mental notes on this one, just some of the things I wanted to bring up. But, I do take notes.
Yeah,
because you ask really great questions.
He does, very insightful.
Oh, thank you.
With great questions.
You know what's interesting, too, is how many of the authors come on the show and they go, oh, you read the book.
Oh, no, most of them say that.
I know, mm-hmm. And I. How could you interview someone about their book and not read it?
You know, it's like on the Today Show, they have producers like giving the clip notes and the little marks in the banner.
Oh, I know. It's like saying, "Well, I'd like to do a review of the latest Jurassic Park movie. I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's quite good."
Yeah, I've heard it's good. So why don't you tell us something about it, Chris? Well, look, we're out of time, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll be back. We will be announcing. I'll have Ronan put a little announcement as when we will be back on live. Thank you again, everybody, Russ and Bobby Jean and all the co-hosts we've had, Richard and Bob. What's his name? Bob. Yeah, Bob. Yeah. What's his name?
What's his name?
Bob, what's his name, Burl?
Henry Park.
Yeah, and Henry Andy, Park and, you know, everybody who's Richard been in and out of the studio over the years, Court and all those guys. Yeah. You know, it's been a great run, and we've had a lot of fun with you. And it's not over. It's not over. It's just we got just a little bit of a hiccup here. But
just going into second chapter is all.
Chapter two.
Chapter two.
We'll open with Kathleen Rogers and sometime in September. Right. So we will let you all know. And with that being said, thank you all for joining. And Russ, thanks for having this idea.
This is fun.
And Bobby, thanks for coming in with us. And your microphone sounds terrific, incidentally.
I'm so glad. Thank you for telling me that.
Oh, you're welcome. And of course, we're gonna go out with the normal Jefferson Airplane. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We are out of here.